M38. Number 2A.
Now, what constitutes cybernetics? The term cybernetics comes from the Greek, meaning cybernetes, as far as my Greek goes, and means helmsman. Helmsman, the one who steers the boat. So, the helmsman is that one who steers towards a pointed aim, you see. Now, in cybernetics, now what I'm saying now is not my invention of it, but I just try to present the very fundamentals of cybernetics. I'm very hesitant to say of the science of cybernetics, because it is quite a question if it is a science at all. Quite interesting, it is. So, the fundamental of cybernetics is taken from that Greek word, helmsman, steering of a boat, because they have taken that, because on a boat you always have four different officers. The first office is the captain. The captain is that who decides and makes the primal decision what aim he wants to achieve. On that boat is a navigator, just as on a plane, a navigator. His job is now to plan out, to program how this boat comes from A to Z, how he gets there. And he must make a program how he goes along for 2 hours in this direction, then he has to go into another direction after so and so many miles and so on. He has to program the whole passage. Then you have on that boat the helmsman who steers the boat. And what he has to do, he has to execute all those commands which the navigator has given to him step by step. Day and night, he has to steer that, and you see that this is the using of the program, putting it into action. But that boat doesn't go anywhere without the fourth office on that boat. You must have a rower, a motor, a force that brings you there. These are in every cybernetic model the fundamental factors, no matter where it is applied. So, how could we define cybernetics? I can't. I tell you why I can't, because those who are interested in cybernetics since 20 years can't either. The latest book I read about cybernetics has the title "Nobody knows what cybernetics is." And he shows that one can hardly put into words, into a definition, what cybernetics is, because it involves so much that one single definition just somehow doesn't fit. You see, or now let's just try, perhaps, to define it, so as to give a hint of it, we could say that cybernetics is the art of steering action towards a set purpose with the aim, with the desired aim of reaching it. That's a very bad definition, huh? You see, it is the art of steering action for a set purpose, and all what is implied with it in order to attain that aim. Let's first have that simple, reduced definition. Now, you could say, how funny that they cannot even define what cybernetics is, and they sent the men on the moon on the ground of cybernetics. Well, that's the beauty. That's the beauty. That we can make use of something exactly before we can define it mentally and intellectually to ourselves what it implies. It shows that cybernetics is something much bigger than what we are yet dreaming of. And the very fact that we can't yet define cybernetics doesn't make it useless. Just a little seed of truth can do wonders, even if it's a little. And so even a small grasp of cybernetics was already able to achieve human wonders, if we want to call it that way. Now, how is it, really, if that boat is going on its passage? The captain has set the aim, he goes to sleep and reads a good book or has a good meal. The navigator has done his job and he has said to the steerman, yeah, you watch day and night, be careful and just obey exactly. And then comes something which has not been predicted in the program. Suddenly there arises a wind and the boat is driven away. And the whole program comes out of shape. There is the Sixth Fleet is having maneuvers. He didn't know that, so he has to get around that Sixth Fleet and he has to get out of his way. The whole program begins to come out of shape. That's like if our system gets out of shape because we have eaten something which is poisonous. Gets out of shape. It's not according to program. Now, cybernetics, you see, is that art which says, but the steerer, the helmsman, can feed back an information to the navigator or even to the captain, say, look here, your program has gone out of shape. I have to go to the right or to the left. I have been driven away or I have a counterwind. I don't get as fast ahead as I want to. And so the navigator receives information and has to calculate again what to do in order to achieve his aim. So you have that so-called feedback in cybernetics. See, that's something which you don't have in a system. That you don't have in a wonderful machine. A wonderful machine runs and runs as long as there is no interference with it. The moment there is an interference with it, and the bigger the interference is, the sooner the machine stops. Not cybernetics. That's just the purpose of cybernetics, to see that the moment something unpredicted comes into the calculation, that at once a self-organizing system is set at work which feeds information back to the navigator or even to the captain and they begin to calculate anew, give new commands, and then they can go on again. Can you see that here into structure and system comes a new element? What they call, or what we can call, the self-organizing factor. It is a self-organizing system. So, we can introduce here something, namely the term circuit. I must confess to you that my English is not good enough to know all the technical terms of cybernetics. So that sometimes I may have to introduce a term of my own making which may not be the right term in the technical language of cybernetics, but perhaps it's even better because when I make up a new word, usually you can understand it, whereas the cybernetic language is completely incomprehensible for an average being. So here you see that within cybernetics you have a so-called circuit. See, a circle that closes itself. You have a command of the captain to the navigator to the steerman. There is a feedback from the steerman, from the helmsman to the navigator, perhaps to the captain. And so the circle closes in information, just to give again, start again with new information. So cybernetics, what is that self-organized structure which has not only a purpose and the faculty of achieving and arriving at that aim, but it has built within itself a mechanism, if I may say so, a circuit, which has the office of bringing always everything into balance again, into equilibrium again, always back to normal. Well, Christian Science always tries to bring back everything that interferes with the being into normal. That's the level of Christian Science, certainly, that which does that. Now, let's see. We have seen those four offices. We have seen cybernetics is just the human model of a divine idea, of the divine cybernetics. What are those four offices in divine cybernetics? Well, you have guessed it. Certainly, if you have some sense of the word Christ, Christianity, and science, that you have sensed at once that really those four offices are the Word, the captain, who has set his aim. Through the Word, everything is made that is made. He was the great commander. You have the Christ which programs everything, which leads towards the desired result. We have Christianity, which we know is the constant use of any details in order to fit into the whole plan. That's the helmsman. And we have science, the fourth factor, namely the rower, the motor, because knowing is power. Knowing is power. So those four of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science are really the biblical expression of the four great offices of cybernetics. Now, let me give a few examples of how cybernetics works, and I give it only for the only purpose for illustration, because spiritual teaching must be done through symbols, through illustrations. Where did we have, so to say, an awareness of the first cybernetic model? It was really when the steam engine was invented. And then, was it what or who invented then what is called the governor, I think, in English? Namely, that safety valve which is there to govern the pressure within the, what you call it, the steam boiler, you see. You boil the water in the boiler and boil it and boil it until the steam gets stronger and stronger. But if you go on boiling and boiling, the boiler explodes. So as not to make the boiler to explode, you have to let off some steam. Just as in the human system, you see. You have to get off some steam sometime. So, actually, we would have had a man there standing who watches how the temperature goes up or how the pressure goes up, and then if the pressure goes up too much, he should stop the heating so that it doesn't explode. And instead of putting a man there, they invented that governor, which is a little, what you call that, a safety valve, which when the pressure gets too big, too strong, it opens and the steam goes out. And it goes out as long as the steam pressure is too big. And then it closes again. And the heating goes on until it reaches again that point where it's dangerous and the safety valve opens again. And you don't need any more a man standing there to watch it. He can go home and have a good sleep, you see. That governor governs itself. It's a self-organized mechanism. Can you see that? It organizes itself. Well, my English is not good enough to know what the pressure gauge is. And I'm always afraid that Sir Roy has a little laugh at me when I talk about technical things. But I think, Sir Roy, you are quite agree with what I said, more or less. All right. I get into trouble many times this week, you know. I will talk about medicine, and I have medical doctors in here, and I talk about it. So, all right. Now, let's have another example, which you know, that's the thermostat at home. What you do, you say, I want my home heated at so and so many degrees. And you put in your thermostat, you fix the degrees you want to have, so many Fahrenheit or Celsius or whatever it is. And then you can leave that whole thing day and night just as you like for the whole winter. Because the heating goes on, the moment it is hot enough in the room, that thermostat makes click, you hear it sometimes, and that click brings into operation another gadget which stops the heating to go on. And it stops as long until the average heat falls below that heat which you have decided to have, and the moment it falls below, it makes again click and it starts heating again. We don't have to do it. You know, in earlier times, we have always to watch the thermometer, how warm it is, and then if it gets too hot, you have to go down into the cellar and turn off the heating. Now you don't have. You don't have to do a thing. It's self-organized. That's a self-organizing system. You see? It is that you once, as a captain, decide what you want, so and so many degrees. Then the governor puts into motion the whole heating system, and the helmsman, he says, oh, it's too much now. That thing has to be changed. Information back, stop heating. And so it stops heating until it comes to the point where it has to heat again. So it starts heating again. And all that without anyone being involved in it. Well, these are mechanical cybernetic models. But there are plenty of others which you know very well, only that you never thought that they were cybernetic models. Take a bee, just a bee. A bee in a beehive likes to get some honey. And another bee comes along into the beehive and says, oh, I have found a wonderful field of flowers where there is plenty and plenty of honey. That bee gives to the other bees an information. It's like a captain and gives an information and says, look here, at this and this distance, in this and this direction, you find a wonderful field of flowers with honey. That bee does that by giving signs with the wings and everything, which have a purely geometrical value. It informs the other bees that in this and this angle to the sun, the bee has to fly, and that when the angle gets shorter and shorter to the definite angle, then he has to stop because there is the field of flowers. So in the bee, there is a geometrician in the bee. See? In the bee, there is a geometrician which knows exactly in which angle of the sun the bee has to fly. If it's dark and no sun, no bee goes out because there is no angle to the sun. The bee flies in a bee line to the field and suddenly comes against the farmer house. What to do? Has to get out of the way. Has to get out of the way either to the right, either to the left, or on the top. But anyway, that whole geometrical program gets out of shape. The angles get out of shape. The distances get out of shape. Perhaps the bee is a bit tired in the evening. So the distance gets out of shape. See, he can't make such a distance as was dictated. So he gets out of shape. He has suddenly to re-inform the navigator within itself, the geometrician within itself, and say, calculate newly. I have gone out of the way. I have to this angle and so on, and gets there. So, in the bee, you can see that there are various systems at work in order to make the whole cybernetic of biology work. Namely, you have a purely mathematical or geometrical system working in it, but you have also a biological system working in it. That biological system, it says, all right now, your wings up and down. It says, get on doing. He has the motor in itself. It's biological. It comes to the field. It sucks up the thing, goes back to it. See, it's not only geometry that is involved. It's already a different level involved, a different realm involved. And yet those two realms work together as one, no more as two. It's no more like you have it at the universities. If a man goes to the university and is very sick, he goes to one faculty and anatomy, and he says, oh yes, I look at you men as an anatomical structure. But if he says, but you know something is not functioning properly, he says, all right, go to my colleague, to the next faculty, to the physiologist. He knows about physiology and operation of the thing. I'm not the expert on it. If that physiologist finds out that something is wrong with his psyche, with his mentality, he says, well, that's not my thing. You get away and you go to the next one. And he gets to the department of psychology. If he is at the department of psychology and he finds perhaps out that what he needs is really only a spiritual idea, he says, go to the theological faculty. But each faculty is separate. In a cybernetic system, you don't have any separation of scientific fields. They are all one. That's the big thing, you see. Therefore, cybernetics is breaking down the differentiation of sciences. It's breaking down of separating sciences into so and so many dozens of sciences. It is all taken in one, fundamentally. Or you take the human body. Now, I get with the doctors a bit in difficulty. Take the human body. The human body is a wonderful cyberneter within you. It's a self-organizing system. One day, or one point of the day, suddenly you begin to feel hungry. Well, there is an information coming to say, you are hungry. The best thing you can do to that is to eat something. You go and eat something. Well, then the whole bodily system begins to work. I don't know how, but the doctors in here will tell me that as you eat, then perhaps certain chemical reactions will be put into operation. It will affect, I don't know, the blood or the blood pressure. I don't know what. Sorry. I should call the doctor up here and explain what happens when we digest the food. It's a purely biological, chemical, let's say chemical reaction. But when that chemical reaction comes to that point where it opens the safety valve and says, now stop, don't eat anymore. See, it's an information which comes to us, to a mentality, from the biological realm to the psychical reaction. Then we feel, oh yes, I have enough. And when I feel I have enough and I feel so satisfied and I say, I'm happy. Or I even say, now I can work again and do some spiritual work. So there is a whole self-organizing system, but the interesting thing is that not one realm is separated from the other. They are always intertwined. It's the terrific thing that cybernetics brings, you see. Since 200 or 300 years, the universities were splitting up in faculties and faculties and faculties and faculties, no one knowing anything what goes on in the next faculty, having no bridge between the faculties, splitting the whole man into parts, into an anatomical man, into a physiological man, into a psychological man, into a spiritual man, splitting that poor man up into parts and bits. Cybernetics brings that back. It has no separation, watertight compartments. It's going on. So all four offices of Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science, or captain, navigator, helmsman, rower, are always working in a self-organizing system as one. You can take one of the best examples you can say how you are such a cybernator is when you drive a car. You're a car driver, such a cybernator. You start out with your car and you are a captain, say, I want to go to this and this town. You set the plane. Then you say, how do I get there? Do I have to take the N2 or the N4 or the that or the other? You program how to get there. Then you steer. You steer. But suddenly on the way comes one from the right and one from the left and you have to get out of the way. Or you come to the roads are up and they say detour. Well, your whole program is set out, you see. And you have to feed back and say, now, how do I get there where I want to get there now? The situation is very different. And so, at the fourth point, you put your foot on the gas pedal, and that's the motor. So in one, you are all four. It's always one. So we must see this, you see, that's what I want to bring out. We have to see this, that the four fundamental self-organizing factors are always one, not four. They're all four offices in one. Multiform in office, but always the one thing. They are always working in every realm of experience. Not only either in the anatomical realm, or in the psychological realm, or in the physiological realm, or in the aesthetical realm, or anything. It's always one. That's what cybernetics does to us. Our human body is perhaps such an illustration of the inorganic, the organic, the psychic, the aesthetical, the spiritual, everything in one. We can't split ourselves up into bits.